You know what that was all about?
Oh, no. What's going on is that we're trying to rent it to 61 Water Street. And all of a sudden, the sheriff pops up, okay, and wants it, or thinks he wants it. So supposed to be on the consent agenda for last Tuesday, but it was pulled because the sheriff wanted it pulled.
Okay. Now, what item again are we talking about?
The lease at 261 Water Street. Is that what you're talking about?
I would imagine that's what it was. This is, of course, the lease for your storefront that would make it accessible for people to actually come to the Tenants' Rights Union without barging into your bedroom every time you have a guest, right?
Yeah. And a client.
Client, yes. Clients in the bedroom. That sounds interesting.
Oh, boy. I get that too far.
So the sheriff didn't want the issue on the agenda. Is that significant, or was that just some minor
thing? Yeah, that was supposed to be significant. That's when we were supposed to get our go-ahead on the lease.
Well, what's the problem with the sheriff? Does he doesn't like tenants, or what? Doesn't like unionizing?
I don't know if there's a problem with that. I think it's just a territorial and possession trip. You see, because that place, 261 Water Street, has always been designated for the sheriff for a time in the future, when they might need that land to expand the grounds there by the jail.
So he's actually going to oppose your going into that building?
We don't know that yet.
This is, of course, for those listeners who don't know, this is a little building that, if you're coming out of Santa Cruz along Water Street, over the Water Street Bridge, and immediately to your left, you'll see the jail, and then there's a couple little buildings in front of it, and one of them is that building which I guess the city council was helping you to rent for Tenants' Rights Union.
Yeah, they granted us the $1,200 so that we wouldn't have to pay the $1,200 filing fees for a special use permit. Mm-hmm. So that's what that was about, and that was really good of them. They really support us.
So are you?
And they even made us a quasi-governmental agency, which puts us in competition for that place slightly at 261 Water Street. We have a good stance and a good stand for that, you know, good claim to have that for 3 years, that's it. And that's basically what we're going to be asking for if it comes back to us. Say if the sheriff can't come up with the money to fix up the place, it's going to cost a small bundle, right?
Hmm.
It goes back to us.
Well,
and then we can come back with a stronger position.
So
like instead of a month-to-month lease, we want a three-year lease.
Mm-hmm. So are you planning to do anything at the next supervisors meeting on Tuesday, or should people attend that?
I'm hoping that we're going to be there, and if we need people, we'd make a few phone calls around. We have some letters of support coming in.
Well, again, I want to encourage people to contact you simply either if they have problems with the tenant landlord difficulty, or
and especially if people want to do something,
or if you want to help other people who have problems. Right? Mm-hmm. It's 426-0644. And again, you know, money is great. $2 is not much to give up. I mean, that's, a hot dog and a half or half a hot dog? I don't know what that is. Depends on where you buy it, I guess.
And we're going out canvassing in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We have a good canvasser going out. And she can make rent in a month, but at the rate that she's going right now, which is only going out 8 times a month, or 10 times a month. So things looking upward, and we want everybody out there who wants to have protections from evictions and possibly lower rents in the future, or at least a rent freeze, to talk to your neighbors, get the message out, give them our phone number, and I hope to be having a radio show.
Oh,
we hope
good.
To be having a radio show.
And you can stop taking up all my radio
time. Yeah, so I'm going to let other people get on. And thanks again for the airtime.
No, listen, it's really informative to have you on, Marco.
And I can go on for a whole lot longer, but
well, listen, stay tuned and call back. You're welcome on the air at any point.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again.
All right, Marco.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And that was Marco Maroney and Donna Dice, Maroki. Yes, thank you. My producer has corrected me again. That's Marco Maroney and Bonna Butt of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. And you can call them at 426-0644 and help them out, get some help from them. And they're in the middle of setting up a real office and doing real outreach into the community. and making some changes that some of us only dream about. And so don't fail to make use of this opportunity now. I mean, it's like with the Cannabis Club. When the Cannabis Club is now closed, the Santa Cruz Cannabis Club, we could have done something while it was still alive and awake and to support it. Now it looks like it's, you know, it's 6 feet under at the moment. Hopefully it'll be resurrected. But it's a real question. Let's act while we can. Let's take a brief musical break, and then we're going to have a live guest on the air. Can you imagine?
Late one Monday evening, the smoke was thick and black. The neighborhood was set ablaze by cops on the attack. Shots were flying through the flames and neighbors looked concerned as firefighters stood and watched a block of buildings burned. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. They had dirt and they had garbage, too many dogs and cats. Their children wandered naked, in their home they welcomed rats. They were loud and antisocial, they were violent and lewd. They were primitive and hostile, and they had to be subdued. So it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Their hair did not look proper. Their attitude was bad. Their radical ideas made decent people mad. We had to rout them out, you see. We had no other choice. The people here were all agreed in one disgusted voice. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, but please don't call it a bomb. It was an entry device. Those weirdos wouldn't leave, even when we asked them nice. They tried water guns and tear gas just to get those kooks to move. The bomb was not a good idea, though the mayor did approve. Cause it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Yes, it was urban renewal on the move from up above. Clearing out the riffraff from the city of brotherly love. So be sure to curb your lifestyle, clean your house and fold your kids. Or you may wind up a rubber heap within the city's grids. When it's urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh yes, a family that would not move is now removed for good. Well now, a family that did not move is now removed for good.
And that was Mark Levy singing Move, Urban Renewal, about the destruction of the black organization Move by the Philadelphia police when men, women, and children were burned up in 19, I believe it was 82 or 83. Interestingly enough, one of the survivors of that, Ramona Africa, came to Santa Cruz 2 years ago and endorsed Dan Hopkins and the City Hall sleepers protest in front of City Hall and ending the sleeping ban. And she is, of course, a potential endorser. I guess it's fair to call her an endorser of the repeal initiative that we're doing now, although she hasn't been specifically contacted around that initiative. she certainly supported ending the sleeping ban, and that initiative, the initiative is certainly a step in that direction. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm your host, Robert Norris, on the afternoon edition, or the Sunday edition, or we're almost in the afternoon, of Bathrobe Spears Broadside, civil rights show. We have twice a week here on Free Radio. Our other hours are at Thursday from 6 to 8. We've been talking about a number of things this morning, ranging from the drug prohibition war to tenants' rights. And we're also concerned, as regular listeners know, about the rights of homeless people to simply exist in public spaces, to be able to live. And one of those rights has to do with the right to sleep. And with us in the studio is Becky Johnson of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert. We're just got back from Holy Cross Church, where the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban has a presence there, and we're passing out flyers and gathering signatures to end the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz. And we're delighted to have the endorsement of Father Mike Marini on this issue, because the religious community ought to support this initiative. That is, if they've done any close readings of the teachings of Jesus Christ. But Father Mike Marini is among clergymen. He is someone who not only preaches the words of Christ, but he acts on them. And it takes more than words, folks, and we're thrilled to have his endorsement.
I guess this is sort of a special season, Easter season. Were there a lot of people up there at the church?
There's a very large congregation of Holy Cross, and we had four people from the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban there talking in conversation. Congregation, we passed out flyers to most of the people, and I was surprised to see Barbara Williams there. You remember her, Robert. She spoke at the Citizens Police Review Board, and she claimed to be a union representative of the Police Officers Association, although I later learned that no way could the Police Officers Association at all be equated with a real union. It far more represents management than it does working class cops, shall we say. So I was surprised to see her, too. I didn't know that she considered herself religious.
Well, yeah, actually, one of the things we didn't cover in the last show was the Police Review Board brouhaha that happened last Monday, I guess it was. You were there. You actually were part of that brouhaha, where Barbara spoke for the first time that I remember, actually, on any strong way about, she was upset with allegations made against police officers, though she didn't specifically respond to any particular ones, but she attacked those who'd made those allegations, and we actually have that on tape. We're going to try to play that later in the show. Again, we're going to cover the issue of the Button Street shootings, which was the main business that the community brought to the Citizens Police Review Board, though again, the board itself focused on technicalities. They weren't concerned about the issues around, they could have been, around the Button Street shooting, the shooting of Brian Andrus, shot four times by three police officers for allegedly wielding a baseball bat and allegedly striking, I guess, two officers with the bat, although the story differs depending on who you talk to, and the police reports have been veiled, so you can't read them. Not to mention denied to the defense, who Andrus himself has been charged with multiple felonies. But I understand he's hobbling around now. He's actually out of his wheelchair, and he was freed from jail by, I guess, community members and his mother primarily, who got together a large bail sum. But I'm kind of rambling here. You're mentioning, again, we were talking about the sleeping ban and talking about what the churches are doing to deal with this issue. I guess Father Marini was involved in actually directly sheltering people in the summer of 1996, when your own interfaith satellite shelter program, Becky, because I know you're on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, essentially was reduced to very, very few slots, less than 40, right?
like 28 through much of the summer. And, of course, the population of homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz, we estimate to vary from a day-to-day basis even between 500 and 1,500 homeless people.
Now, by 28, you don't mean it's 28 different places where homeless people can stay. You mean room for 28 people on the floor of a church.
Yeah, we have like sleeping mats that are put down, and actually Holy Cross sometimes, when the pavilion is open, the pavilion that housed the merchants after the earthquake, when that pavilion, which is now up by the Holy Cross Church,
it actually didn't house the merchants, it housed the merchants' merchandise. Merchants went home to their own houses, right?
Right, exactly.
The city had no problem putting up fancy, expensive, extensive pavilions for merchants, but they couldn't spare one for homeless people, and they still can't. In fact, as I understand it, they closed down Marini's Pavilion back in 96, and part of that was, wait a minute now, we have a,
no,
that didn't happen?
No, he didn't close down the pavilion. What happened was that over the course of time, an increasing number of homeless people started finding refuge up at Holy Cross, just outside on the grounds. Father Marini had let one homeless man sleep on his back porch, and very shortly, it was 2 to 3, then 6, and when he found he had 15 people crammed on sleeping on his back porch, he started letting people sleep on the field. He realized there was such a huge need for shelter space in the city of Santa Cruz. It was that nothing was done, he couldn't possibly have done it legally because of the law here in Santa Cruz that makes it illegal to sleep at night, and it also makes it illegal to cover up with blankets or bedding at night. So he provided an area on private property where homeless people could sleep, and then he also provided sanitary facility, bathrooms, opened them up, and hired a monitor that would go and walk around at night. Not. This was to protect the people who were sleeping there, and to prevent any problems from arising. And to my knowledge, there were no problems. But some of the neighbors noticed what was happening, and they filed complaints, and all it took was a single complaint, really, for the city to come in and informed Father Mike Marini that he was violating the law by allowing people to sleep on his property at night.
Now, at that time, Mayor Mike Rotkin was, Rotkin was mayor, and I guess this was also the time when there was a protest in front of City Hall that was gone on for about 3 or 4 months to encourage the City Council to consider human rights at home as well as human rights in Nicaragua or wherever else they're trumpeting this week. And I guess they weren't doing that. But did Rotkin have a role in any of this, as far as you know?
Oh, absolutely. He was up in the neighborhood around Holy Cross the day before the edict was issued, and he was talking to neighbors.
What edict was this, and who issued it?
It was issued by the sitting City Planning Commission. It was an announcement to Father Marini that his having the people there was a violation of the Municipal Code 6.36.010, so-called the camping ban law, and that he needed to end the program, which he did.
Actually, 6.36.010 is the sleeping ban provision of the camping ban law, a mistake often made. That's true. Quite right. It is It's not 010. 010A is the sleeping ban, and that's
010B is the blanket ban.
Correct. And that, of course, is a law that I encourage all of you out there to really take some action to change. And that can be done if you're a registered city voter in Santa Cruz or willing to become one. You have to be within the city limits. But if you register as a voter, you can carry these petitions around and actually get signatures. And it is, we are really within striking distance of putting this measure on the ballot. I was sort of gloomy about it and about not having enough organization and so forth, and I'm still not entirely happy. But the turnout that happened yesterday at the Earth Day festivities at in the benchlands of San Lorenzo Park was really quite impressive. There were literally hundreds of signatures were gathered there, and I think that it's possible we could reach that May 28th deadline with the 6,000 signatures we need. I say 6,000 because that's how many the Pelton Street Homeless Garden Project would have required if considering their rate of bad signatures. You really only need 3,800, but apparently the city authorities found all kinds of problems with the signatures they got, and we are anticipating a similar close scrutiny. So if you want to get a petition, so what should you do, Becky?
You could call me. I'm at 429-8529, and you could, if the answering machine greets you rather than myself, then just leave your name and number, and I'll call you back, and we'll make arrangements for you to get a petition. Or you could also call David Silva. He's at 429-5284, and he's over closer to Emmeline Street. If you're in that neighborhood, I'm up on the east side. We also have some locations downtown where people could pick up petitions. You have to be a registered voter in the city of Santa Cruz in order to gather signatures, and you have to be a registered voter in the city of Santa Cruz to sign it. If you live on 7th Avenue, I'm sorry, you're not in the city. You may, post office may think so, but the election board doesn't.
But that doesn't mean you can't help with this campaign. We can use all the help we can get. We even enlisted the wizardry of Bob LaMonica, who masterminded several recalls against Art Danner. I guess there's currently one making the rounds again.
Yeah, and he gathered the 20th signature yesterday at the Earth Day festivities, so I think it'll be like the 7th attempt to recall Art Danner, and boy, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if that occurred.
Right. Well, anyway, we're trying to get all these experts together to, and Bob is, of course, quite an inspiration to us in this, to, you know, get this petition on the ballot. It would be the first time in history that it was done here in Santa Cruz. It's a real gut level homeless issue that even the conservative politicians and the so-called progressives won't touch. We couldn't even get Mayor Celia Scott to sign this petition yesterday.
No. First off, yesterday Peter Scott signed our petition, and he's sleeping with the mayor, shall we say.
Watch out there, Celia.
And we have had many discussions with Mayor Scott, and she is, I believe, is very strongly allied and may surprise all of us soon. So watch the spot.
Right. Well, I'm waiting to be surprised, Celia. Get off your butt and sign the petition, please. and issue a public statement about it. It is long overdue. Even in the event this petition fails to get on the ballot, which I don't think is going to be a case, I think that's what we need to do, is put this thing on the ballot. Bringing this issue to the forefront is vital, and that's what we're doing here. And again, we're giving it to the voters so the voters can actually have a real say on the issue in November, and maybe tell the city council where to get off here. That it's time to stop arresting people simply for sleeping. Camping, yes, but sleeping, no. You can regulate camping. You can regulate sleeping in residential areas, but you can't tell people where there is no legal place for them to sleep that they're going to be arrested if they close their eyes or cover up with blankets. That's just not something that the majority of Santa Cruz voters will tolerate. It's repugnant to the conscience of Santa Cruz.
Now, I heard that there's going to be some tabling this afternoon in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. Do you know anything about that?
There's tabling going on, I think, at different places. I've heard that there is going to be a table at Bookshop Santa Cruz by the Alliance for Democracy
is one of our endorsers, and we're thrilled to have them. That's a really brand new organization to Santa Cruz, and there's some really good people involved with that. And so there's going to have a table up in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz this afternoon, and we hope to have petitions there. So if people are out and about on Pacific Avenue And also, we're planning on being at the Homeless Community Resource Center later this afternoon. So if people want to sign the petition, or if they're registered voters and want to pick up some petitions to circulate that, we'll be out HCRC probably around 3:30.
That's at River Street and Highway 1, or actually 115 Coral Street, right down there where 1 and 9 intersect. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and our phone lines are open at 423-5361 for any of you who want to get the jump on me before I throw the next tape on here. I'm going to actually be playing now an educational and amusing conversation I had at the courthouse about 2 weeks ago with freedom fighter Richard Quigley, who's been involved in a number of causes. Helmet law, he's been concerned that people have a right to not wear helmets and to wear them as they wish. And he's been involved in the drug war, fighting that. He's been involved in fighting to assure that ordinary civil rights are retained for people in Aptos Shopping Center, Rancho Del Mar, young people. That's going to be we have an interview with one of his friends, Jerry Herman, a street minister who has been the victim of ongoing harassment out there, and we're going to be hearing about that. There was a trial that was scheduled for Friday of Brian Clark, whose girlfriend was harassed by Deputy Thurber, one of the sheriff's deputies. Again, part of the, I guess, campaign out there to drive young people, skateboarders, rollerbladers, smokers, I don't know, whatever you will, out of the area, or make them, you know, wear their credit cards on their foreheads. I'm not quite sure what the problem is, but we're going to hear interviews with Kate Wells, a local attorney, and with Jerry Herman. But let's hear a little bit from Richard Quigley and what he's been up to. He was running for sheriff, as you may remember. He was running for sheriff when he was struck from the ballot because he didn't have sufficient experience as a deputy. Actually, has never been a deputy, or a degree, a law degree. I think it's not a law degree, but you need a special training. We're going to hear from him about that, and let's join him in progress. But don't forget to call in, because we do want to hear your calls. We want to hear your reaction. You, the community, you know, are really have to be a part of this, or else it's just me talking. And much as I like to hear myself talk, you got to give me something else to respond to other than the silences in my own brain here. So give a call to 423-5361. Let me know what you think of all this. Richard Quigley, a candidate for sheriff, or at least he was until I read in the Sentinel yesterday or something that they overturned your bid because you didn't have enough diplomas or something?
Yeah, and they said I wasn't a cop.
You wasn't a cop.
Yeah.
So we spoke about this in a past interview, Richard. What was the reasoning behind this, or did they give any reasoning?
Oh, the court, why they turned down my motion?
Yeah.
No, they just denied it.
So this, in fact, doesn't just impact you. It impacts at least three other individuals running for sheriff in the state of California.
No, I don't think so. I think it's they denied my petition for writ. The other three guys are all doing their own thing in the courts.
And before different judges? Or?
Well, there's another one that's back up in front of the California Supreme, and he filed on Monday, and as of yesterday, he hadn't been thrown out. So I guess he gets more than the 2 days I got.
I see. You were filing on your own behalf, or you had some legal eagle with you?
No, I do my own.
And what's your reaction? I know when we talked about this before, you said that you weren't going to do a run-in, a write-in candidate.
No, the sheriff's race is up. It's a moot point this year. What I'll do now, though, is with that in my hand, what I'll do is I'll move back into Superior Court and move for declaratory relief and let the court write down their reason, their understanding of the reason why the big court threw me out.
And again, the issue here is, should an ordinary citizen be able to run for the office of sheriff, which is a very powerful office?
Well, the other side of that is that should a citizen be able to vote for anybody they want for the office of sheriff? And that is far more reaching, far-reaching in its implications than whether or not I can run. It's whether or not you can vote for whomever you choose.
Well put, and I stand corrected, or added to.
Yeah.
That's a very important point you're making.
Yeah, well, that was the point that I put in front of the court. I mean, I went in there as two people. I went in there as a prospective candidate, and I went in there as a voter. In fact, I went up and went through my registration as a voter upon receipt of that. I'm no longer a registered voter in Santa Cruz County and won't be until such time as they have free elections.
Are you a licensed driver?
No
That's
comment.
Another story on that one. So what are you here today for?
Oh, I come in and talk to Kelly. I've got an appeal on my last case, and I'm going to talk to him about signing a public defender, and then we got to do a sentence modification.
What was the last case? What was your sentence, and what's that?
Oh, 35 days driving while my license was suspended there.
And this, of course, was the case where sort of the Sergeant Devereaux mob coming after
it's
you.
It's all about the red parking place. Yeah, it's just Devereaux.
The Aptos Shopping Center.
Yeah, the red parking place and Aptos Shopping Center, the illegal parking place, Dave Devereaux. This is all about protecting his ill-conceived and ill-carried-out behavior. He's a bad boy, and they're just going to reward him for it and wonder why he continues to be a bad boy.
Now, Sergeant Devereaux is no longer at Aptos, right? There's a new police sheriff person out there now?
Yeah, there's a young lady out there that seems to be doing at least a quiet job, if not a good one.
Is the coffee roasting company still evicting undesirables from the sidewalk in front of the coffee roasting?
Well, they're trying. They most certainly do. The thing I find most interesting is that the harassment of the people that may be around the area is being doled out more by the woman that manages Gottschalk's than anybody at the roasting company. So that's kind of an interesting little turn.
So what's your situation? Are you allowed to walk through the area without being arrested?
Oh, no, I'm supposed to stay 25 yards away from this manager of Gottschalk's store, but that's under appeal. I just filed my opening brief. We're going to get that one. That's going to be a honey of a lawsuit. I'll end up winning that one big.
And the motivation here was you were one store over, separated by solid walls, and yet they claimed you were within 25 feet and had you arrested. Is that what?
Well, that's what went down in December. But there's no issue on that because the DA dismissed because they didn't have a case.
Right.
Now the issue is the restraining order that was obtained by them with the help of inside information from the district attorney's office. No, we got conspiracy, collusion, all the words that you like to hear. It's all in there.
It's all there?
Yeah, it's all there. It's great right. stuff, great juju, yeah.
Now, what about Alan Johnson? What's his role in all this?
Don't know that he has a role in all this. He and I do.
Good luck, you guys.
He and I do communicate a lot because he's the one that officials and different agencies are assigned certain people what they consider.
Joe Johnson is a DA investigator.
He's the chief of investigations for the DA. Yeah.
I know. He kept us out of a press conference on the Happy John Dine case, and then he seemed to be more forthcoming when you realized I was an associate of a reprobate like yourself. We talked some more.
Well, Alan's a good cop. You know, they're good cops can be made to do bad stuff, but the fact is that Alan's a good cop. Hi. Yeah, well, that chance this year.
Anything you want to add about pressing public issues that Free Radio should know about?
We just keep moving forward. You seem to be showing up often enough to ask the right questions to keep everybody up to speed that wants to be up to speed, and the rest of them, pearls before swine, you know?
pigs, pride, integrity, and guts, right?
Yeah, you got it.
We're talking to Chris Davis.
And Chris, you're here in court, and have been in court before, around an axe handle. What was that about?
Well, the police, in fact, the Santa Cruz Police Department had pulled me over for what they said was my lights not being on, which in fact I just pulled out of a lit area, and I have daytime running lights, and I hadn't flipped on my taillights. So at any rate, I wasn't at all concerned about the circumstances. And I went ahead and they asked me some questions. And
was this in the evening?
This was in the evening, and they asked why my lights weren't on, and I gave them the explanation, and they seemed to be okay with that.
Who were the officers involved, you know?
I don't have their names. I could find that information out.
How long ago was this?
This was approximately, I believe it was last October, November.
And where did they pull you over?
It was over above the Kinko's in downtown, on the street above that, in the hillside area.
So did they? So they pulled you over for a taillight violation?
Correct. Because they said my lights were on, which was not the case, because my lights turn on whenever my automobile is on. They have daytime running lights, but because my back lights had not been flipped on, that gave them reason to pull me over.
Because your what hadn't been flipped on?
The back tail lights.
Uh-huh.
but my headlights were on, so it's just, it's with the newer cars now.
Mm-hmm. And then they started asking you questions.
That's correct. And a couple of them came behind in the car with a flashlight, and they spotted an axe handle. And they kind of pointed out to the other officer, and the officer said, "Oh, you go, what do you go? You have an axe handle back there." And I'm not really, I was not at all concerned. I thought it was just a routine stop. Mm-hmm. And they asked me, they go, "Oh, is that, you just keep that in the back, you know, in case for protection or something?" I go, "Yeah, just that's all I said." And they go, "Oh, so," they go, "it is for protection." I said, "Well," I go, "it's just in the back of my car. I've always kept it there." And they said, "Well, do you mind if we search the rest of your car?" And here's where I made the major mistake. Fatal. That's not quite fatal, but financially fatal mistake in that I gave them...
You paid a lot of business.
Right, right. My attorney didn't mind. I let them search the car because I had absolutely nothing to worry about. And they asked me prior to searching, they said, "Is there anything in the car we need to be concerned about?" And I said, "Well, I have a knife in the car." I said, "It's a knife that I bought." I said, "There shouldn't be any problem." And the officer's words to me, "Well, we're not worried about any knife." In the process of searching the car, they did find the knife where I told them it was. And the next thing I knew, they walked over me and placed me under arrest for weapons possession. Okay.
Did they tell you, did they make any comments while they were doing this that indicated what their motivation was here?
Their motivation was the fact that the axe handle went under the classification of a, quote, billy club, and having two weapons in the car did justify not a misdemeanor felon's possession, but I was charged on felony weapons possession. Incidentally, two or three other officers that night said if I had been carrying a gun in the car instead of an axe handle and an over-the-counter knife, the charges would have been less. So I was held at the police department on $5,000 bail and charged with a felony weapons possession.
And so how long did you spend in the Jusco?
Well, fortunately, I had friends that I was able to get out the next day. But so began a long proceedings of legal procedures.
You spoke about this issue on KSCO?
Actually, I don't think this particular one was brought up. Dave Allen was aware of the circumstances and put me in touch with the attorney I'm currently with.
How many court appearances did you have to make? And candidly speaking, how much did it all cost you in terms of hours and money?
I had to make about four appearances, and monetarily, with time loss from work, it was, like I said, four or five court appearances, and fines, well over $2,000.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a technical recruiter for high-tech firms in the Silicon Valley, hardware, software.
Well, you hardly look like a street person. You have a nice coat and jacket on there, and you know, slacks, unlike certain scruffy types I didn't dare speak of. What kind of a car was it?
It was a 1996 Jetta truck.
Did you hear the police officers make any comments about this particular catch?
I can't. What surprised me was the involvement. There was no less than eight officers involved at the scene. I mean, I think we have a severe overstaffing of police in Santa Cruz County. I mean, these folks are looking. They're just looking for something to do. When I went down to the police station, I was the only one there, and they said, "Gee, slow night." And it's like, well, I'm glad I gave them something to do.
So we have a comment here from Becky Johnson.
Yeah, we just recently learned it's $25 an hour that police officers are paid.
I thought it was $39. 25?
Well, that's what we just heard in a recent case. It's like $25 an hour.
Oh, that's interesting. So how long did this whole process take in terms of the amount of months or weeks that you took to resolve it? They took to finally release you for your axe handle and your knife?
I would say the whole procedure took about 2 months of from the time I was arrested to when it was finally resolved in court. And it's actually not resolved. I did have a good attorney that worked the charges down from a felony to a misdemeanor, and we have come to some arrangements that as best I could hope for once I've entered the system.
So you're not interested in a jury trial on this issue?
Not at this point, no.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, Conversations from the Courthouse with Robert Norse. I want to remind you that Free Radio Santa Cruz is going to be at the flea market tabling today. So come and get programs, t-shirts, patches, and other paraphernalia if you want to be a part of this Free Radio Santa Cruz movement. Our voicemail, if you want to leave a message on it with a public service announcement, up to 2 minutes, be happy to play it. It's 427-4523. Email for Free Radio Santa Cruz is frsc@cruzio.com. Snail mail, post office box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And the on-air studio line, for those of you who are champing at the bit to call in and talk about whatever's on your mind, hopefully you've been listening to our show here, is 423-5361 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Last show, I think it was actually two shows ago, we were talking to a street vendor and hearing the kind of treatment he was getting down on Pacific Avenue. Let's talk to Jim a little more and hear what he has to say.
To a street poet, street spirit salesperson, and well, recently homeless person, Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for the opportunity to give my views. First of all, I'd like to talk about the post office thing. I'm a regular panhandler at the post office and have been for approximately a year, year and a half. I know several people through that that I've met on the street, and also have gotten many odd jobs from that place. Philosophically, I'm passive. I do not confront people verbally. I sit passively with a sign. And when I do speak to people, I always make it a point to make eye contact and be very polite and avoid confrontation at all costs. I've had people compliment me for my behavior, saying that they appreciate my non-confrontation. And recently, I have become quite concerned about the laws in this city that seem to be trying to make my lifestyle illegal. I don't know what the thing is there. They want me to leave town or what by making it illegal for me to exist. I talked to you and Becky about getting signatures for the petition to end the sleeping ban. And April 15th, being tax day, there was quite a bit of traffic at the post office. So I thought that might be a good place to solicit some signatures.
This is the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban.
Yeah, for that petition to get that put on the ballot. Previously, I had been just panhandling at the post office passively with my sign, and had been asked to leave on two different occasions.
By at the post office, you mean like right next to people's boxes they try to get in the line indoors, where people are trying to purchase stamps? Or are you talking in the more public areas on the steps?
I'm talking about the steps outside. There's two big square stone things on each side of the steps, and usually I'm off to the side so as not to be in people's way.
Mm-hmm.
Standing actually on public sidewalk, but leaning against the granite blocks there that the post office. I assume they own those blocks.
And what happened to you on those occasions when you were doing that?
A woman, postal employee, I assume, came out and informed me that I wasn't allowed to solicit there and asked me to leave. So I said, hey, no sweat, and I left, trying to avoid a confrontation. This disruption in my regular habits has cost me dearly. First in terms of revenue, and second in terms of casual labor jobs that I have gotten from there in the past. People know to look for me there.
Now, you said that on the 15th you were circulating a petition, a legal voter's petition, trying to put this initiative on the ballot, and this woman approached you?
I don't know. I guess you could say she approached me. I had my back to her. I was facing the street. She came out of the post office through the front doors, up behind me, stopped about 20 feet short of me and said, sir, and when I turned my head, she said that I was not allowed to solicit there and would I please leave, at which time I did leave. But she didn't ask me what I was doing, She didn't know whether I was soliciting donations or selling street spirits or gathering signatures, which was the case. I was trying to gather signatures. But she didn't take the time to find out what I was doing at all. She's put no loitering signs in the windows there, very small, of course, you can't read them from the street, but put no loitering signs there, and I guess she saw me there for more than a few minutes, assumed I was loitering, and then did ask me to leave.
Time to have a loiter-in at the post office, but before we reach that point, since loitering is, by the way, a completely permissible activity, any laws against loitering were thrown out in 1982-83 by the Supreme Court in the Larson case. They were using loitering laws to harass a black resident of Southern California, L.A. Orange County area, just by jacking him up every time they saw him with demands that, you know, he show his ID under a loitering law. All loitering laws were thrown out. Loitering is a non-existent crime. Except in Santa Cruz, of course, where city ordinances now use other words, since loitering is a constitutionally defective word. Sitting down is now considered to be criminal behavior within 10 feet of a shop and so forth. But I'm not aware that, for example, sitting on the post office steps is illegal unless you're blocking the traffic. But let's turn now to David Silva. David, you heard about this case, and I guess about another case, and you went to the U.S. Postal employees and concern and talked to them.
Well, actually, I've just now heard about this case. I had heard about another case this afternoon. I was coming out of the noon mass, and I had to deliver a couple hundred petitions to a couple different people.
It should be said that you are, in fact, a coordinator for the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban. Has been working quite actively on this campaign, making statements to the press and so forth.
Well, I try. I'm disabled and I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm trying to keep up with the demand. That we've had a big push last week, and there's a big explosion in the campaign right now. I swung by the post office to see if the tabling was going okay and all that goes with it. And I saw the tabling is being folded, and a man comes up to me, a man I've known for many, many years, Frank, known for many, many years, and a homeless person. I would say that he's not like your guest here, a pacifist. I would say he's kind of like a, you know, stands up for himself kind of guy.
But he's a vet, perhaps?
Yeah, he's a vet, and he's always been real sweet to me. But he tells me